We're going to start with a nice word about Shavuos, the Yom Tov Shavuos coming up. But I'm just going to take this opportunity to remind everyone again that Torah Anytime is having a campaign. And whoever could contribute and donate, if you could do so on my page, that's definitely appreciated. And in any case, I think it's going to be a gevaldig zechus for anyone participating in the Avodas HaTorah and the Zikei Rabim that Torah Anytime accomplishes. So with that, I'm going to start with a nice word from the Racham HaKodesh in Parshas Yisroi. When he talks about Kabbalah HaTorah, the Racham HaKodesh mentions three things, says Gimel and Yunim, that are the Ikar Achun at the Kabbalah HaTorah. The three main preparations to Kabbalah HaTorah, and he explains the Pusik based on that. He says the first thing is that somebody has to be motivated and driven. If somebody is Ba'atzlis and he's not ready to put in the work, then he's not going to be able to be Masik the Torah. And that's why we find that the Torah is often giving encouragement, Chizki V'emtzi, all kinds of Lashoinus, about putting in effort and being encouraged to learn Torah properly. The second thing is shiflis ananova. Ein devar Torah miskaimen elab misha mashpil atzmoi, mais matzma kemidbar. The person that could achieve and attain the Torah is only a person who is humble. That's the only way the Torah lasts by somebody. That's why we find vayachni, lushin shiflis ananova, like the midbar. And the third thing he says is yid chachomim beschabris b'layv shulim v'tumim. A person shouldn't be alone. When a person's alone, Chedav al-Abadim, the Gemara explains, a person's not going to be able to be koine the Torah. It's only when a person is with other people, connected with Chachomim, with people who could help him be koine the Torah, that's how somebody's able to be mekabel the Torah properly. So again, you have to be motivated and driven, not be lazy. You have to be humble, because if somebody's arrogant, the Torah is not going to be able to last by him. And the third thing is to be connected to the right people. Now we know that Kabbalah HaTorah was a digma, was an example of a chasana. Hashem was marrying Knesset Yisroel with the Torah. And every time people get married, they're also doing something very similar to what Kabbalah HaTorah was about. And a lot of things that we learn from a chasana, we learn from Kabbalah HaTorah, the way Hashem got married to Bnei Yisroel. So I think that these three things, I hope I'm not taking it out of context, by saying that when somebody gets married, there's also three important things to be able to make the marriage last, to be able to have the right shulam bayis, to be able to have the ashuras hashchina that we want our homes to have. And I think that it's so similar. Number one, you have to be motivated and driven to do the right thing. You can't just sit back and wait for somebody else to do it. Many people would want somebody else to put in the work and to make a marriage work. Number two, you have to be humble. Because if somebody is too full of themselves and too self-absorbed and self-entitled, it's very hard for anyone to make you happy and to be happy on your own. And the third thing is to be connected with the right people. I don't think everyone needs a therapist or even a mentor necessarily, or a rebbe or a kallel teacher long term, but it's good to be connected with the right people, to know who to talk to when something bothers you or when you need chizik or something, and not just to decide on your own and to know what the right thing to do is. So I think these three points are definitely something that could help all of us in our own lives, in our own marriages, in our own Yiddish Shtibe. So with that, let me read a question and see if we could discuss some ideas that hopefully will be relevant for more people than just the situation that this person is describing over here. Dear Rabbi Gurum, first of all, thanks for all your shiurim. I really enjoy listening to them. May Hashem repay you for all you do for Klal Yisrael. Thank you. I have a question. I'd really appreciate it if you could address it. My question is as follows. I'm a girl of 25 years old, and Baruch Hashem, I got engaged not too long ago. I'm a very nervous kala, as I'm scared that this chasn of mine can't connect emotionally. I'm not sure if he's connected to himself, and when we met, I didn't feel like we connected so good. He is very nice and very smart and has loads of friends. My question is, can you teach someone to connect emotionally? I spoke to many people about this already, and I'm still nervous and confused. My shidduch really happened with my parents asking advice from a rebbe and a makibel, and they both said it's okay, and it's good, but I'm still nervous. Your shir on the topic that a shidduch is bashert helped me a lot, but I still wish you could expand more on the topic. Yes, a shidduch is bashert, but what's with all the people who unfortunately are not successful in their marriages? Just tell me, please, one thing. Can you teach someone how to connect emotionally? We're not talking about anyone with autism. The question is, could it be that somebody can't connect emotionally, but at the same time, so many people are claiming that they're his best friend and he's very popular? And let's say, Chas v'Shalom, I'm right, and he's not someone who can connect emotionally. Will he be able to learn how to do that? Obviously, only if he wants to get helped. If you could address it in Yeshua, I'd really appreciate it. Thanks so much. May Hashem repay you for everything you do for Klal Yisrael. Kind regards. Okay. So, the question basically is that you're a kala, and you're not sure if the person that you're going to marry has this quality of being able to connect emotionally, which I understand is very important to you and in general. Now, let me just start off by saying that it's normal for people to have doubts and insecurities and anxieties, not only with shidduchim, but about everything. Very few people out there that are totally content and calm and living the perfect shalvas nefesh abatayach life that the Chavos Avos talks about, just being totally reliant on Hashem and knowing that everything is great, even though we all strive for that. But I'm saying it's normal for people to have all different kinds of anxieties and worries. There is something that's called normal worries and something that's called a little above average, out of range worries, where somebody gets overtaken by worry and anxiety and fear and all kinds of uncertainties. And it's very important to be able to determine between the two of them. You know, if somebody's feeling a little anxious about something that he doesn't know what's going to happen, it's called normal. And if somebody is being overtaken by that, it's interfering with their life, interfering with their mood, interfering with their preparation for chasna, for example, then obviously it's just a sign that it's a little overdone. In general, with children, for example, you're taking a test in school. I'm sure you remember that feeling. It's normal to be afraid. It's normal to be worried. And if somebody's not worried and couldn't care less, sometimes that's a problem. But it's not normal to not be able to fall asleep because of it, or to be so anxious you can't go to school because of it. So it's always important to just be able to tell the difference of what's healthy, normal, it's okay, and when it's a little overdone. In general, it's also important to remember that most things that people worry about and are nervous about it, about the future, right? It's not about the present undesirable situation as much as what's going to be. And obsessing about what's going to be doesn't usually help what's going to be. So it's just, it's not always helpful to hear that, but it's just important to realize that, you know, we do have to rely on Hashem, and nobody knows what's going to be. And even when everything looks wonderful, so that you have no reason to think something might go wrong, it could still go wrong. There are people that obsess over all kinds of worst-case scenario situations, even though they have no reason to think it might happen, because they're taking things out of control. And sometimes people have no reason to be worried, and they're not worried, and the next day, Chas v'Shalom, something happens. We don't know, and we're anyway in Hashem's hands. So just make sure that you don't get overtaken by something that's out of your control, and that obsessing over it might just make it a little worse. Now, let me start with this. Talking about Shidduchim, talking about Akala, Kanayin Ahor Akala, at 25 years old, you're probably a lucky person. You became Akala at 25. Sometimes, by the time people get 25, things become harder, and sometimes people don't become Akala. They wait till 26, and 28, and 30, and 36. So you're definitely a lucky person. You have a lot to be grateful for. Now, talking about Shidduchim, and you want to know, you know, Bashert, not Bashert, Hashem has everything prepared for everyone. In general, not just when it comes to Shidduchim. When it comes to Shidduchim, that's what people talk about. Bashert, who's my Bashert, your Bashert. Hashem has everything prepared for everyone. We come down to this world and Hashem has it all planned out and we're always taken care of. And if we'd only believe it and feel it and come to that Madraiga where we know it and live it, then yeah, we'd be very calm and very at peace with everything. Now, especially when it comes to Shidduchim, that's where we know that Hashem is Mazavik Zivigim, and before a person comes down this world, Hashem already called out, Abu Amyan Koyim Mitzias Havlad, Bas Ploini Leploini. We believe this, and we're taught this, and we try to feel it, and we don't always feel it, and we don't always understand it either. When it comes to anything that's emina and betochen, there's only so much we can understand. Faith and anything that has to do with rochni is bechlal and emina betochen befrat, is that something we can understand? If it would be logic and it would add up, then everyone would understand that, everyone would believe it. But that's what belief is about. We don't know. And part of the enigma and part of the riddle is, hey, how could it be that you could turn down your shidduch? You lose your shidduch? How do you lose it if it's bashert? And when you marry someone later, after you turn down the first few, which one was the real one? How could people get divorced if it was the shidduch, not the shidduch? We don't know these things. We don't know. There are answers for each question individually, but we don't know. We can't understand it. It doesn't work like in the typical system of things, the typical science of things that we could understand and break it down to certain data that makes sense. We don't get it. But we still believe it. There is a bashert, and when something happens, it's bashert. And the person you marry is bashert. And how everything else falls into place with this bashert, we don't know. But we definitely believe it and have to talk about it and chazer it until we start feeling it, or at least until it becomes very clear to us, even without feeling it. I think people see a tremendous amount of Hashgocha Prutas, especially when it comes to Shidduchim. How it happens that this one meets that one, and this one was waiting for that one, and this one heard something about that one, didn't hear something about that one, and things like that. You know, these things are, we see a tremendous amount of Hashgocha Prutas when it comes to these things, especially. And Hashem has His way of making things happen. Now, Bechlal, when it comes to Emunah B'Tochen, as much as before something happens, Bechlal, the Inyan of Basher, before something happens, we have a shtadlis to do, we have to be responsible, we can't do anything irresponsible, we have to be mature about it. There are ways to do something, even though it's going to be Basher. And when people rely on the Basheret to justify all their wrong moves and decisions, then that's obviously a big problem. By the time something happened, however, we do believe that it was Basheret. And again, that's something we can't reconcile, but we believe it. So by the time you became a kala to someone, yes, I believe that it was Basheret, and it is Basheret, and it's your Basheret, and it's wonderful. Now, the fact that you mentioned that you, your parents, got guidance from a Rebbe and a Mekibbel, whoever it is, this is very customary. Even though there were some that didn't think it was the right thing to do, some certain Gedolei Yisrael had a different attitude about Shidduchim. But in general, very customary to get guidance, believe in Minhag Chachamim. A big part of Yiddishkeit is Asay L'Churav, Astalek and Asufik, especially when it comes to a Shidduch where there's no way to know 100% that it is the right one. As much as you feel it sometimes, you don't know for sure. And a lot of people felt that it was the right one and it turned out not to be not to look so great. So we get guidance and we trust the Minhag Chachamim. And if you have Erlich Yid and Gedolei Yisrael, those who understand things, and based on what they hear or based on what they think, they feel confident telling you that this is the right one, then yeah, that's a very, I feel it's a very reasonable way to confirm a doubt or to get rid of certain worries that you had. I also want to mention something that so often I don't think people take this into account enough. When it comes to Shidduchim, we know it has to be Basheret, and it has to be Min HaShemayim, and we know we need Siyat D'Shemayim, all that. And very often, what people are looking for at the end of the day is to control what's really going on, and to find the right person who they feel comfortable with, and compatible with, and attracted to. And like that, this is Basheret. Now it's Basheret. There's so much more to it. You can find the best person that you're most connected and attracted to, and you can really, really be attracted. Not you, Chazor Shalom, I'm not talking about. I'm saying, unfortunately, there were people that married the perfect Shidduch, and everything was great, and it really was great. And unfortunately, someone passed away in a car accident, so there was nothing great anymore. Well, yeah, sometimes people who are the perfect shidduch, and they're so happy they married each other, and unfortunately didn't have children. Or one of them wasn't well, or wasn't healthy, or all different things that happen. My point is just that the Basheret part, we're so dependent on Hashem leading our lives, that, of course there are other parts where, yeah, but I think that's what I should be doing. I don't want to just rely on the Basheret because at the end of the day, maybe I should be looking for something that's going to make me more happy. You don't really know what's going to make you happy. And even if you found something that essentially would make you happy, you don't know how happy you'll be later in life because you don't know how much Gizin Panus and Nachas you'll have. So we're anyway so dependent on Hashem leading our lives and running our lives. And as much as we do have to be responsible, there's more to it. There's more to it. So when people look at it later, again, not you, Chas V'Shulam, but sometimes people look at it later like, I fell in. This is not what's good for me. It's not what I wanted. I only did it because somebody told me, only because I trusted a certain Erlich Yid, or only because my parents wanted it. I'm not talking now how to do Shadichim. I'm talking about people who got married. And they're looking back and they're saying, this was a problem. So I understand that maybe it was really Basheret because I see it happen. But it's not good. We don't know what's good or not. And you don't know if your life would have been worse if you would have done something else. And that's part of what it means to believe in Basheret. We believe that Hashem has a plan set up, and when you marry someone, even if your marriage isn't a happy marriage, it could be everything else about your life is happy because of it. Because that's the person you have to marry in order to have the happy life, in order to have nachas, in order to have children. So we don't know these things. A person initially is supposed to go forward in life always looking for the best job, and the best shidduch, and the best seat in the classroom, and the best everything else, and the best mesechta. And when something happens, we believe it's Basheret, and Hashem knows what it is. And even if later we don't see or feel that it was Basheret because we don't feel or see the good in it, we still believe that this is what's good. Sometimes all that's good for is your tikkun on this world. And that's also something that we generally don't understand. Another point, just because I keep on mentioning about how to go towards a shidduch, even though in retrospect, it's always, we say, looking back, it's always Basheret. But going into something, you do want to find the best thing. But even there, that's where people make a lot of mistakes. Now, you say you're 25 years old. I don't know if you're 25 years old because it was difficult to find a shidduch, or you're 25 years old because there was an issue why a shidduch was difficult to find, or because somebody was blocking you, you had an older sibling, or because you weren't yet interested in getting married, you weren't ready for it, or you were looking for the perfect one. I have no idea. I don't know, because I don't know who you are. Sometimes there are people that are 25, and sometimes there are people that are 35, and I've seen this with people that are 45, and they're still looking for the perfect shidduch. Now, I forgive everyone the perfect shidduch, but I have news for you. Nobody ever does the perfect shidduch. There's no such thing, because there's no such thing as perfect in this world. The people that do the perfect shidduch are the people that see perfection in the person that they're going to marry, and they're not seeing the imperfections. Nobody is perfect. Nobody. Nobody's perfect. And even though when it comes to finding information, you hear about somebody, a boy, a girl, wow, they're perfect, top of the class, and you think that you're doing the perfect shidduch, it's wonderful to think so. And you should think so, and that's the attitude should be, wow, this is perfect for me. But if you're going to find a fault somewhere, or notice something's not perfect like you would have wanted, and then get upset about it, you're not being realistic. I spoke about this not too long ago. You're not being realistic because there's no perfect people out there. There is nobody who has every quality that there is. There is no such thing. So the point is you have to prioritize. Not even when you're 18 years old and you still have a lot of choices. And even if you're the best girl in the class at 18 and your parents' phones are being bombarded with a long list of top boys, you're still going to have to know how to prioritize and find the right one and realize what's most important in life. As you get older and as people get older and as it becomes harder to find the shidduch, either because somebody's overage or overweight or whatever other issues that they have that's working against them, you have to prioritize more and more. My point is just that if you're Baruch Hashem 25 and became a kala and you worry that your chusn, your husband might not have a certain something and you're getting all bent out of shape because of it, it's just important to calm down and realize that you may have 80% qualities and 20% not. And even though if those 20%, which obviously always the ones that you don't have, might end up being the most disturbing, it might not be terrible. That's part of what marriage is about. I'm only saying this because I was recently and often dealing with people who are looking for shidduch for a very long time, and they're so unreasonable about it that it's scary. And when you ask them, why wouldn't you take the shidduch that was suggested? I heard that there's this and this issue. Now, that is an issue. I'm not saying it's not an issue. If you'd be 18 and you had other choices on the table, or at least you'd be 18 and you're not in a rush, then yes, I would understand. And it's not saying that I would suggest or I would encourage you to turn down the shidduch because of it. You know, not terrible, but I understand it. But by the time you're 30, what's the alternatives? Like, why are you so certain that you'll find somebody who does have this quality but not have all the other imperfections that this person doesn't have? So this is something that you just have to sometimes be very happy about. I know this is for me and it's good and I don't need all the other things that are not for me. Going toward the Kabbalah Satorah, Leisachmoy, the Ibn Ezra, talks about how could Hashem tell us not to be jealous of somebody. Somebody else has something, I also want it. It's an interesting Tzidik Satzadik from the Tzudik where he talks about being mispallel to Hashem when you want something and say, Hashem, I want it like that person has. Not because I'm jealous of that person. Because Hashem is just a way of expressing my tefillah, a confidence. I know you could do it. My friend has that. I also want it. Without being jealous. But back to the topic, how do you not be jealous of somebody that has more than you? And Ibn Ezra says that when it becomes clear to you that there's something for you and something for them, and what's for them has nothing to do with you, you're not jealous of it. He says nobody's jealous of the king's daughter. Nobody feels like, oh, I wish I could marry the king's daughter. I'm so jealous of the one that got the king's daughter. Why? Because it's out of my range. It's out of my range. And most people know what that means when it's out of your range. It's out of my range. I'm not jealous. But I'm jealous of the other one because I think that's in my range. That's the mistake. Hashem wants us to realize that's also not in your range. If it's not for you, it's not in your range. What I'm just trying to bring over here is that it's important for people to realize that not everything is in my range. Not everything is in my range. So I might not be getting the perfect shidduch. Now, I don't want to sound pessimistic and be discouraging to people about finding the perfect shidduch. You should find the one that's the best for you and you'll be happy about for the rest of your life. At some point, we have to acknowledge that there might be something that I don't like about my husband or wife. And even before I get married, I'm allowed to accept the fact that I might notice something that gets on my nerves. And you know what? It won't be terrible. It won't be terrible. And it was Bashar. And I'm happy about all the wonderful things I'm hearing about this person. And I think it will be wonderful. And there's something that people have to hear before they get married and after they get married. And I think this would make a lot of people happier. Now, this was all just by way of introduction, talking about shidduchim in general, not about the situation that you're describing at all. So let me explain this. In general, people live and learn. People live and learn. If someone panics right after they get married or even before they get married, I'm noticing that my wife doesn't yet know how to cook well. She doesn't know how to cook well. It's terrible. I just got married. I'm coming from a home and my grandparents, everyone was cooking in these Hungarian meals. It was a geschmack. And mama, she doesn't know how to cook. She burned something and there's no salt. If you start panicking right away, instead of giving someone the time and patience to get it and gradually grow into what life is about, then you're making a mistake. People usually get it right. Slowly, people are able to adapt and grow, and that's not something that you have to be worried about. People in general, at every stage in their life, most people feel like, okay, now I got it. When you look back, I see that 10 years ago, I thought I got it. I'm ashamed of what I thought I knew then. Now I really got it. And this is from first grade till the old age home, where people always look at those younger than them or their own mistakes in previous years. Like, then I was still naive, I was silly, I didn't have the maturity or the understanding or the intelligence. Now I got it. So what happens is, at any given point in your life, when you see something is not the way it should be, you feel like, if it's not good now, then when's it going to be good? This is when it counts. But when you're 30 and you look back at when you were 20, you say, you know, when I was 20, it bothered me that my husband didn't this or that I didn't that. And slowly, we both came a long way. So it's not a question that you both have a way to go, both in connecting properly and knowing what's important in life. And if you're getting all stuck now as a kala, that your husband might not yet have a certain skill that you don't even know if he doesn't have, by the way, but he might not have it right away. There's nothing to be worried about. He might not have it right away. There's no reason to assume that he won't be able to attain it. And sometimes when people make a case out of something right away, you don't cook well, you do cook well, you don't cook well, you do cook well. And cooking is just a silly example, I know. You're always late, you're never late, you're always late, you're not on time, you're not reliable. You just keep that person stuck. You don't let them grow. You have to let things happen. So that's just another reason to not be all afraid that you're in for some kind of disaster, chas v'shulam. Now, let's talk about the topic that you mentioned over here, about emotional connection. Okay, emotional connection is a pretty vague word. I think you'll hear it more from women than men. But I understand what it means. You want someone to feel connected and feel good. You want to feel the connection. That's what emotional connection is. To make each other feel connected, make each other feel good, etc. You're marrying a boy who is very popular, has a lot of friends, like you said, and it sounds like he's just fine. It sounds like he's just fine. I have no reason to think that you'll have any issue at all, and I trust the fact that, like you're saying, a lot of people claim that he's their best friend, he's a popular boy. I would assume it's just fine. The fact that when you met, I don't know how long you met or how long you spoke, but the fact that he was a little uneasy, you know, meeting you, I think it's fine. So I don't think you have anything to be worried about at all, just in case that helps you. That's first of all. Another thing is that it could take time to adapt from a boy to a girl. You know, from he's interacting well with his friends. He's very popular, very social, very emotionally connected, and very a good IQ and EQ and all the other things that we want. And he might not yet know how to interact with someone as complicated as a female. He might not. It's okay. And as a matter of fact, you might not know how to connect with a man either. You're busy with your friends and all kinds of other things, and it might take time for you. And usually these things happen naturally. It's not the Mars and the Venus myth where, wow, we're on two different planets. I definitely don't believe in that. I know that men and women are wired differently. They are different, not a question. But for the most part, women who interact in a healthy and comfortable way with other women, and men who interact in a healthy and comfortable way with other men, usually have what it takes to learn each other's style as well. And if it doesn't happen the day after the chasna, it could happen a week later or a month later, and happens slowly. So I don't think you have what to be worried about, both because of what you're describing and both because, even if it does take a little amount of time, I think you'll be fine. I think you'll be fine. So if that, anything of that comforted you, both the fact that it's bashert and both the fact that you sound like you're describing somebody healthy and normal and both the fact that, you know, it could take a little time and everything will be fine, I hope that was helpful. I do want to mention, and this is where I think it's very important, I don't know if you're worried because you're worried, or you're worried because you heard a lot of talk about people who don't know how to connect emotionally, or women that are unhappy in their marriages because they don't feel connected emotionally, or things like that. I don't know. There are many situations where people complain, women complain, that it's lacking, my husband doesn't know how to connect with me emotionally. Some of them might be valid. In other words, some of them might be describing a person who just doesn't have the skill, or doesn't have what it takes, or is isolated and introverted to an extreme, to a point where he doesn't know how to relate to somebody else's feelings. There is such a thing. I'm not going to say there isn't. I think I could say that most often, and I don't know how many people are going to like what I'm about to say, so whoever wants, you can stop listening right here. I think most often, when this becomes a federal case, when you don't know how to connect with me emotionally, you don't know how to connect with me emotionally, and it just becomes a bigger and bigger case and complaint and problem, and we're looking for solutions, are going to people for help, he doesn't know how to connect with me emotionally. And I hear these things all the time. I could tell you, let me put it in seven lines of what often, very, very often is really happening. Sometimes it's a woman, let's start with the easy one. I mentioned this in the essay that I wrote lately. Sometimes it's a woman who's looking for her husband to be her girlfriend, which means she's used to having girls and sisters and those who are all excited about what she's excited about and those who like to yap and talk and yenta and recipe and style and clothes and just hear each other and they're not really hearing each other, they're both talking at the same time. And she's looking for that in her husband because that's what she thinks emotional connection is about. We get it, you get me, I get you. When I laugh, you laugh. When I say something is nebby, you say it's nebby. And they don't find that in their husband. So very often they're just looking for the wrong thing and then they claim that he doesn't know how to connect emotionally. Sometimes it's a woman who feels that her husband is responsible for her happiness. So when she sees that he's not making her happy, okay, so you don't know how to connect with my emotions. We're not emotionally connected because my emotions aren't great now and you are responsible for that. You know, in other words, I'm just trying to bring out over here the point of a simple mistake, and it's a codependency thing where sometimes men start believing in this, like, if she's not happy, I must be doing something wrong. As if it's a responsibility and obligation of a husband to make someone else happy. Now, it's wonderful when you could. I know. It's wonderful when you could. In general, when somebody's trying to make the other person happy, and they're both believing this thing of, you should be making me happy. You're right, I should be making you happy. Both of them end up being somewhat unhappy. So from that, I'll just go into another one, and that's where a woman is unhappy for other reasons. She can be unhappy in general for other reasons. Let's call this point number three. She can be unhappy about she's not getting along with her mother. She could be unhappy about the fact that she's feeling totally unfulfilled, unproductive, or anything else. She could be unhappy about her own personal issues, and she wants him to make her happy without even realizing that anything that he could do, even if he's not obligated, but anything that he could do, is not going to address her unhappiness. But she's not realizing or admitting or acknowledging why she's unhappy, so she's looking at him. And now you're not how to emotionally connect with me, because anything you're doing is not really doing it, so there must be something wrong. Another thing is a woman who, and again, I hope I'm not bashing women. I'm trying to explain things so that people understand them and could deal with them better. Another thing is a woman who doesn't know how to articulate what it is that she needs. So she talks in the abstract, and she just knows how to complain about what's not there, and the feeling that I'm not getting, and what I wish I would get. And when the husband says something like, how exactly could I give it to you? What is it that you want? If I have to tell you, then it's already not doing the job. So if I have to tell you what I want, then you have to figure it out yourself. Now, she doesn't really know what she wants, but she knows she's not happy. So again, it's somebody. So now he does not connect emotionally because he's not a mind reader and doesn't know how to figure things out. And most often, that doesn't go too far. So just complaining about what wasn't good and not knowing how to try to give an idea or let someone make you happy is also something that many people get wrong. And then there are those that even when they know what they want, and they'll say what they want, but by then it's too late already. I'll tell you what I want. I want jewelry for Yom Tov, but when you buy it from me, now that you're buying it after I told you that that's what I want, so it's not good anymore. I want you to spend time with me, but you're only spending time with me because I told you to. Or it is what I want, but it's not why I want. It gets confusing. I basically want you to be a mind reader and get it right, and if you don't know how to do that, you're not emotionally connecting with me. So these are just so many different. I could go on and on. I can go on and on. I have so many more examples. Actually, I'll tell you another one. The one that the husband is doing everything right and saying everything right and meaning everything right. Really, when you put it on paper, it's like people are amazed. But really, that's what you're doing for your wife. I can't believe it. And she's busy with the but I don't feel it. But I don't feel it. So if I don't feel it, you must be doing something wrong. I'm sure that if you do it right, I would feel it. And this is where nobody could control what somebody else feels. Like I said before, maybe you're not feeling it for other reasons. Maybe you don't want to feel it, or for whatever reason. That's also a big issue. I'll say another issue. I don't know if I'm up to number 7 or not. I'll say another issue. And that is something I noticed between the lines over here. You said something about being connected with himself. Sometimes you look at somebody who's just less emotionally wired than you. Not talking about feelings, not experiencing feelings, not harping on feelings, not depending everything on how they feel. And you look at, and some people who are more emotional, often women and sometimes men, I look at it like, he's not in touch with himself. He's not in touch with himself. If he'd be in touch with himself, then it would bother him. Instead of saying, oh wow, it's amazing, he's not bothered by that. It's a great thing. I wish I'd be like that. Now, there are people who are in denial. There are people who just are oblivious to what's really going on around them, and they're not connected. There is such a thing. It's just that when we throw that term on everybody who's less emotional than I am, and we say, oh, you're not emotionally connected with yourself, so you can't emotionally connect with me, instead of just acknowledging that we might be different and it's okay and just respect each other for that, I think that's also very important. So I hope I didn't get too over the end over here. I think the point that I'm trying to make, I think it's coming across clear, is that sometimes there are women who complain that the husband doesn't emotionally connect with them, and it's not about the husband. It has nothing to do with the husband. He's doing everything right, and you might not feel emotionally connected. You might not feel emotionally connected. And he might not have what it takes, or be obligated for that matter, to make you feel a certain way. And it's nothing to do with his lack of connection. And sometimes it's about your lack of letting it happen, or deficiency on a woman's part of allowing the connection and inviting the connection. And again, it's fine if somebody has a problem with feeling connected. In other words, but at least acknowledge it. If your husband doesn't know how to make you feel good and you're concerned, maybe it's my issue that I don't know how to take a compliment, and maybe I don't know how to allow myself to be pleased. And maybe if it's not 100%, I take it as if it's nothing and I need help. That's fine. You acknowledge something. You want to go for help? That's also fine. But go for help for the right reason. Don't go to someone who's going to convince you that if only your husband would do it right, then he must be a problem. He's not fulfilling your needs, and now you have a bad husband. It doesn't help anyone. People make this mistake every day. Therapists make this mistake. Women make this mistake. It's not helping anyone. I was talking to a boy last week. He told me very interesting. He was struggling with the chavrisa. He was trying to learn with him, and it wasn't going. And whatever he tried doing, he tried complimenting his chavrisa, tried encouraging his chavrisa, and he just wasn't allowing it to happen, his chavrisa. And nothing was working. And he felt like, yeah, it's not going anywhere. I just have to find someone else. And the next day, he heard a story. His magachir said a story about somebody, a boy who couldn't learn. And he was crying in shul. He was taking a tillum. He was davening. He wasn't able to learn. Right? And a friend of his came into shul and noticed he's crying. He put his hand on his shoulder. He said, what's bothering you? So he said, I can't learn. And it's not going. And nobody wants to learn with me. And, you know what? I'll learn with you. Don't worry. He gave him chizik. And the boy, he sat down. They learned together. And he grew up to be a big roof. So the Magachi was saying, the moral of the story is that, you know, sometimes it's just some encouragement and a pat on the back. You don't know what you're going to do to someone. And the boy's telling me, you know, I took out a different moral of the story. If only you would allow yourself to get help and to be helped, you can grow up to be a wonderful success. Now, of course, both morals of the story are true. And nobody should just rely on the other one. You can't ask someone to allow themselves to be helped if you're not helping them. But sometimes the person who doesn't allow himself to be helped is just looking at the other person and saying, you know, the moral of the story was that you can help someone, so how come you're helping me? Well, I'm trying. You must not be doing it good. So this is something that I think is very important for people to acknowledge and accept. Men and women are different. And if your husband, or your chusin, or any husband, is not emotionally connecting with you the way you'd want, it might not be a problem. Right? The idea of the love language is we express love differently. We experience love differently. So many people use that idea. I talk about this often, and they harp on it. Like, I have a different love language. You're not giving me what I want. He also has a different love language, and he's giving you what he could. I'm not saying that he shouldn't be doing a better job. I'm not saying that if he would ask the question, how could I make my wife feel better, I wouldn't have what to tell him. My point is just that getting stuck on when somebody's not emotionally connecting with you, or put in simpler terms, not making you feel great, or even simpler terms, when you're not feeling good and you're putting it on someone else, very often that's a problem. We could accept that we're different and I might not be feeling great and you might not have what it takes to make me feel great, and sometimes I will need a sister or a friend. Sometimes something in my own life is not making me feel great and everything else. I'll end off by saying that yes, we all want to feel good. And feeling good is very important. Very important. The basis of a lot of functioning properly and success is feeling good. It's very hard to do a lot of things in life when you don't feel good. It's very hard. It's not a question. So I don't mean to diminish the importance of good feeling. I do want to mention that not always is it priority in life. Sometimes you won't feel good, and there's a bigger goal and a bigger focus, and you're about to get married, you're a kala, or maybe you got married by now after waiting this long for me to address the question. There's a bigger goal in life. And even if you're married to somebody who does not emotionally connect with you, and doesn't have to make you feel good, and you're not the problem, and he is, and it's a skill that he can't learn, and won't learn, and never will learn, and you mamish married somebody who has a big lack in this area, there's still so much more about life, and about your mission in life, and about your mission as a Bas Yisrael, building a Yiddish Shtib, that could be more important than that. And if you get stuck on this thing that's missing, even if it's a very big thing, and everything becomes part of this one thing that's not there, and it becomes the excuse and the justification and the rationalization for everything you're not doing, and you're not married, and you're not this and not that, then you're just hurting yourself. So I do think that that's something that we should also take into account, you know, the bigger picture, and to realize the significance that it has on a successful marriage. So just to sum up the few main points, the first point was that yes, shadichim are bashert, and we believe in it, and we don't always understand exactly why or how or where things happen, but we believe that this is the way it should be. A lot of different skills and a lot of different parts of relationships happen gradually and could be learned, and you have nothing to worry about, and in general, you're not describing anything you have to worry about at all. I just took the opportunity to discuss my next point, that when there's an emotional disconnect, it's not always a federal case, and it's not always because your husband's no good, and it's not always because he's lacking a skill, and there's something to think about, and with a goal, with a focus on the bigger goal in life, I think a lot of us could be a lot happier than we are. And I'll just finish off again by reminding you the points of the Rechaim HaKodesh. If you're motivated to do what you could do in a marriage, both in regard to emotional connection and being a good wife and making things work, and you're humble and not self-absorbed and self-entitled, which often makes people feel that they're not connected well, and you connect with the right people, that if you ever don't feel good about something, you know who to talk to, you know where to get guidance from and chizik from and encouragement from and learn from them, I wish yourself, you and everyone out there will be able to live together. Mahava Achim Shalom V'Rayas.